Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown,
where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
Tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 165 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom.
And Sarah Lytle, along with the rest of the crew. Our musical guests this month are Christy Crandall and Charlotte June, performing as the Mingle Dees. We have a conversation with the director, Danya Leova, about the Brown County Playhouse production of It's a Wonderful Life. Another installment of the Stoveside Surveys with Rick Albertson, and essays from Jeff Tryon and Dave Seastrom.
Kate and Danielle from Brown County Bikes return to talk about the opening of a pump track at Deer Run Park. This is like a roller coaster for your bike, no pedaling necessary. We also have a conversation with Dave Gore, John Sisson, and James Tracy about the Native Sons exhibit at the Brown County Art Gallery.
We begin segment one with the live studio recording of Bonnie and Bonnie by Christy Crandall and Charlotte June, known as the Mingle Dees, followed by our interview with them.
I read a pirate book to my sons for bedtime, you know, that had all these pirate stories in it. It was really fun. But it had this story about this pirate. One of the few women, actually, I think it might have been the only woman in the book, Anne Bonny, who was a pirate in the Caribbean back whenever it was, I don't know when, but maybe the 1600s. So it was a really interesting story. She was quite fierce and quite beautiful. So it was sort of compelling. So I started writing it back in like 2010 or something. And then finally, last January, I finally finished it because I have more time now that I'm retired. Okay, so this song is titled Bonnie and Bonnie.
Bonnie and Bonnie, old child of master and maid. Her father disguised her as a boy, so she came to stay. But when the wife discovered her, no peace there was made. So they fled to Caroline, master, child, and maid. To her name, and then her rogue eloped, sailed to Providence Isle, tried their hand at gambling, oh, robbing pirate and drinking, oh. Oh, Bonnie and Bonnie, fierce pirate she, fought better than any man, lived her life. And forsook her rogue, she left with the Rackamo, a scallywagon pirate-o. Out to sea they did sail, dressed as his first mate, fought better than any man, Rackamo his mate. Oh, Bonnie and Bonnie, fierce pirate she, when one day they were taken by the king's own men, and with child was set free, oh, but Rackham sent to hang it out. Bonnie Ann felt no remorse for Rackham or his mates, for if they'd only thought like her, they wouldn't be swinging from the gallows.
Hi, Brown County. This is Lucy Schultz. I'm here with singer-songwriters Christy Crandall and Sharla June. Hi, Christy. Hi, Sharla. How are you guys doing today?
Lucy.
I'm so glad to have you in our studio, and you guys just treated us to such a great musical treat today. It was so wonderful. And you.
Aw,
thank you. What is the name of your band?
The Mingledees.
Okay.
We made up that word, so maybe I should spell it for you.
Yeah, spell it.
M-I-N-G-L-E-D-E-E-S.
Okay, tell me what that means to you both.
Well, we sort of were trying to come up with a band name, and we were bantering around, and we, you know, we're not necessarily only going to do a duo. You know, we're open to having people add on with us. And also, we like all kinds of genres of music. Just seemed to like a good word to apply to mixing of genres, mixing of people and ideas.
It's an adjective. Mingledee means all mingled up. Oh. So then we just sort of added the EES, like we are the Mingledees. And that way we figured we could have a very fluid kind of rotating cast of players. That was what we were
thinking.
I like
the name. It's a great name.
Thank you. I like it too.
So tell me a little bit about how you guys met and give us a little timeline.
Okay.
Did I meet you because of the Magnolia School?
No, I would go to folk festivals. I played in an Irish band in Tallahassee for like 20 years. We went to the Florida Folk Fest like 6 years in a row between 2009 and 2016, but we played out other gigs too. And my spouse and I would go hear other people playing out, and we went out and heard the Mayhaws because some friends recommended them. That was Charlotte's band back in those days, and we loved them. Her bass player was a friend of mine, Carrie Hamby, who's from Indiana. And
my drummer was also from Indiana.
Yeah, her drummer, Deb Berlinger, is from Franklin, Indiana. And she's actually related to the Slavens in Brown County. Isn't that wild?
Oh, that is wild.
So many musicians in Tallahassee are from Indiana. It's unbelievable.
It's really, really weird. There's something in the water.
Yeah.
So when I lived in Florida, I ran into everybody I knew. It was the weirdest thing.
Yeah, that's so funny. We started going to the concerts, and when I'd see Carrie, I'd say, "You got to introduce me to Charlotte." And she's like, "Yeah, she's a real spark plug." And because I wanted to play with her sometimes. Charlotte ended up getting married and, you know, getting pregnant. The Mayhaws kind of dissembled after that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so then I was doing Mickey Faust, which was the theater for the really dramatic arts, and they were always looking for musical acts to open the show, and I wasn't, they don't want to hear Irish music. You know how some people say, we hate Irish music. Anyway, so I said, well, maybe Charlotte would play with me if I asked her. She said, why not? You know, let's do it. So we got up there, and we played all kinds of stuff on the banjo and mandolin and guitar, like Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah, we did all these great, the Ramones.
I Want to Be Sedated on the mandolin and banjo and When Doves Cry, you know. We had a blast, and we had so much fun. We started kind of impromptu just playing together whenever the opportunity arose in Tallahassee. And then when did you move to Chattanooga?
2014.
Okay, so that sort of came to an end then. And
2014. I was an elementary teacher, and I taught Christy's youngest kid.
Oh,
yeah.
For 3 years.
It was sort of like the Harmony School of Tallahassee. And
okay.
Our youngest kid was there, and Charlotte ended up being his teacher. So that helped us get our relationship more solid.
So, Sharla, you moved to Chattanooga, and I heard that kind of changed the way you wrote your music.
So I had a kid, an unexpected child, kind of late in life. And of course, no one wants to jam with you at 10 in the morning, which is pretty much the schedule that I was on with my kid. So I actually started teaching music together classes. So I was making a lot of music with toddlers and infants and their parents. And I played out by myself quite a bit, but I just didn't really have a chance to connect with many other people. And then I got an opportunity to play. It's kind of a coveted gig in Chattanooga called Nightfall. And I put together a band and it was kind of happening. And then COVID. And everything just sort of, you know, flatlined after that. I got to tell you, I am so bored of me.
Okay.
Of playing by myself musically, you know, so bored. So I was really, really ready to play with other people. I always joke that when you play by yourself, the only surprises are not good ones. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot that song. Oh, I can't hit that note anymore. Oh, wait, what? Where am I?
You moved to Bloomington, I heard.
Right. Yeah. So I was in Chattanooga, which is the halfway mark between here and Tallahassee. Right. And so Christy would come through and we would jam and it was so much fun. And then Christy, I think, saw my soul suffering in Chattanooga and said, why don't you come up and play a couple of gigs with me in Brown County? And so I did. And it was fabulous. People here really listen to music. Chattanooga is not a music town. You really can feel the difference between a music town and a not music town when you're a songwriter.
So you got some gigs coming up. Tell us about that.
Yes, we have a gig on December 6th. We're going to be playing at the Chris Kendall Market on Van Buren Street down by the Heritage Winery, I understand. And we're working on getting a gig at Sleeper's Bar in Bloomington. It's part of the Cascade Inn, and that will probably be in early December.
Yeah, just keep an ear out.
Yeah, keep an ear out. We'll put it on the WFHB calendar.
Okay.
Honestly, if you want to be on a mailing list so that you know when we're playing, feel free to email charlajune@gmail.com.
Can you spell that for us?
charlajune@gmail.com.
We did the farmer's market. The awful day.
Oh my gosh. We were playing and this huge wind came along and literally moved the shelter we were under like 4 feet.
Oh my goodness.
What?
Yeah, you guys got a really rainy day.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't too well attended. But anyway,
we had dancers, though. People were in their rain gear dancing to us, which was fantastic. If you want to listen to some of my original music, I'm streaming on all the platforms. So you can look up Charla June. Also, The Mayhaws, M-A-Y-H-A-W-S.
I've been speaking with Christy Crandall and Charla June. This is Lucy Schultz on Brown County Hour, WFHB.
This is Chuck Wills with the Brown County Hour, and I am here with Danya Leova, who is the director of the upcoming Christmas production at the Playhouse, It's a Wonderful Life. Welcome to the show, Danya.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. We're really excited to hear about this upcoming production. A lot of people have seen the movie, watched it, you know, it's a holiday classic, and you're bringing it to the stage with live theater.
I am. And I'm super excited. And I really hope that people enjoy the stage production just as much as they enjoy the movie. I think it's a beloved classic for a lot of really good, really important reasons. So we hope to do it justice.
Yeah, absolutely. You and the cast of characters. So what was your inspiration to do this?
So I moved to Brown County coming up on about 4 years. And I think one of the things that I value so much about being in this community is what a community it is. You know, like, this is such a close-knit town, especially in comparison to bigger cities in other parts of the country. I really want to help people see themselves in the art that we put on stage. And I think It's a Wonderful Life does exactly that. You know, like, I think a lot of people think about It's a Wonderful Life as just the story of George Bailey, but George Bailey is just the literary tool of an everyman, you know, within a community that helps each other through political and economic struggle. They help each other get through wars and all of the crazy stuff that they have to face. And I just think that the values that we see here in Brown County are showcased really well in this production.
So tell us about the cast. I know some of the names are familiar, maybe some of them are not. So who will we see on stage?
A couple of our beloved classics. Tom Preston is making his starring presence on the stage yet again. Seth Wilcock is in it. He was Marley last year in A Christmas Carol. We have the Bolam Kings that are around town. Sydney and her daughter are involved in the production, as is Brendan. But a lot of our people are actually new to this process. Like, this has been a really interesting journey, because most of the cast members actually are either new to stage entirely, or this is like their first show at the Playhouse. It's super exciting. Yeah.
What a great opportunity for them.
Yeah.
And to be part of a beloved classic.
Yeah. Yeah. What a way to get into the fold. Yeah.
Now, I know that there's sort of a twist that you have taken away from a typical stage production. You're doing this in black and white, like the movie.
Yeah, we are. We are doing it completely in grayscale, down to fingernails and hair.
How do you do this?
A lot of patience.
Okay.
A lot of patience, a lot of trial and error. You know, I've been so blessed to have a production team and a cast that heard that, and instead of balking and being like, whoa, that's never going to work, they have trusted me and this process, and we've been learning together. And I really think that theater is something, it's an art form where it's easy to get caught up in doing the familiar things, right? But I like to push the boundaries of what people think that theater can be. And so I think that having something like this in our small little jewel of a town is going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to push a lot of boundaries and also still bring some of that nostalgia that people feel when they watch the movie, you know?
And I have to say, I saw some pictures of the cast in black and white, and my mind was blown. It was like my eyes were playing tricks on me, because it was black and white.
Yeah.
These black and white people, I saw them outdoors. So it's these black and white people in a color world, and it was just mind-blowing.
Yeah, thank you. That was for Halloween. We wanted to do something with the community and also rep the show. So we did trick-or-treating together.
Yeah. I bet that went over great.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. Yeah, and luckily the response from people was always some really exciting, like, whoa, that's crazy, you know? And so hopefully they keep that energy when they come to see the show.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of coming to see the show, I know it's going to be the first 3 weekends of December at the Playhouse.
Yes.
And tickets are available at browncountyplayhouse.org and also at the box office.
Yes. Yeah, we're really excited to put on the show for everybody from all walks, and we really hope to see you at the Playhouse and hope that you enjoy the story and get some holiday magic and maybe some things to think about.
Dania Leova with the It's a Wonderful Life production at the Playhouse. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, and we look forward to seeing the show.
Yeah, thank you.
Now we pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Support for WFHB comes from Our Brown County, a magazine for locals and visitors featuring art, entertainment, and county characters since 1995. Printed 6 times a year and available online. More information at ourbrowncounty.com.
In segment 2, we have a Christmas story from Jeff Tryon, a conversation with Kate and Danielle from Brown County Bikes, and we'll close with the Mingle D's song, Keys Underground, that was recorded live in our studio. We begin segment 2 with a poetry feature. The author of the photo book, Brown County Folks, Rick Albertson, shares meditations from his new book, Stoveside Surveys, while seated next to the wood stove in his cabin on Greasy Creek Road. Each episode has a companion photo you can view on our website, and Rick starts each stoveside survey with a description of that photo.
Looking at a photo of a spiritual visitor, a golden young buck fixated on my soul as he stares deep within me through the nearby window. A visitor looks into the window. I am looking out. He is neither welcome nor unwelcome. He stares knowingly, his intense eyes focused past my physical presence, searching deeper into my soul, perhaps spying my spirit, my essence. He sees more than I. He scans my entire life. He understands far more about me than I ever shall. More than a mind meld, he stands frozen in place, his cloven hooves anchored to solid ground, all of his energies fixed on his soul melding with my own. His searing search causes me no discomfort. I have nothing to hide. Perhaps better said, I have nothing I can hide. He sees all. There is so much within me, turmoil and triumph, that I cannot quite see. Conscious thoughts strain for a glimpse into those unconscious. Strain on, access is forever denied, not in haughty meanness or pettiness or avarice. It just is. Our eyes lock for seconds, minutes, it seems an hour or more. We just are. Time does not stop. The world spins on. We don't. The melding takes precedence with holy hierarchy over cosmic forces of mere space, time, and gravity. I am revealed in full. I silently beg him for revelation, disclosure, utterance, and announcement, to no avail. He is a seer, not a speaker. Off he goes without gracing me with any warning. He takes with him me, more of me than I'll ever know.
A Brown County Christmas. The holiday rolled into old Brown County, attired in traditional regalia, snow covering the landscape with a white blanket, adding to the Christmas appearance. Billy, the little son of Mr. and Mrs. Joseph Pryor, was quite sick. Charles D. Bocamp, age 21, and Miss Mary Ewers, age 18, daughter of George Ewers of Van Buren Township, were united in marriage in the county clerk's office last Saturday. Mrs. Elizabeth Snyder, Grandma Snyder, died at her home 3 miles northeast of Nashville. She was an active member of the Baptist Church. Down at the store, Jim and Tom cozied up to the toasty warm cocoon of a pot-bellied stove, which kept at bay the persistent chill outside. While Jim gazed at nothing in particular off in the near distance, his old friend gnawed his way through the weekly newspaper, mining out the occasional conversational gem. Editor Allison is pleased to note, quote, the continued diminuendo of the uncouth practice of substituting an X for the name of the Nazarene, commented Tom, which is an act of desecration and an affront to that great teacher upon the tenets of whose divine philosophy modern civilization has been builded. Upon the tenets of whose? Has been builded, Jim nitpicked. That ain't grammatical. He's in his usual rare form, Tom said. But the larger point is, who is it that's been offering these egregious substitutions in spelling out Christmas? Who is it that replaces the name of Christ with an X? The very idea was conceived of by newspapers to save themselves the terrible ordeal and expense of having to set 5 extra pieces of type. Funny thing is, right here, 2 columns over in the church news, we discover evidence of the culprits who are X-ing the Christ out of Christmas. Oh no, said Jim in mock horror. Yes, the Methodists. Merry Xmas. Also some holiday happy sap under the byline of Yaller Root Sam, also merrily X-ing the Lord out of the cheery holiday greetings. So it would appear that Allison is given the old holier-than-thou. Tom leaned over, shot a perfect jet of tobacco into the cuspidor, shook the paper straight, and continued his reading. There were a few stray tobacco stains here and there around the stove, but none of them were his. Following the scolding, the editor reveals he was the recipient Tuesday evening of a, quote, toothsome treat, e.g. a holiday pie, quote, highly pleasing to our taste, sweet and palatable from the president of our community club. She lets the cats in the kitchen, Jim pointed out. Better check that pie for cat hair. Jim pulled out a plug of Old Glory in his pipe and for the 100th time fished around in his pocket for his knife before remembering for the 100th time that he had lost track of it. Dang, he said. Tom took out his knife and handed it to him. Jim took the Winchester Premium, opened it, and cut off at the desired wad. Nice enough, he said, returning the tool, but it ain't a Barlow. Bird in the hand's worth 2 in the bush, replied his old pard philosophically. Where the heck had he lost his good old Barlow knife? He felt somewhat unmanned. He had carried it on his person every day for years. A man has a folding knife in his pocket at all times for all kinds of occasions, from peeling an apple to sticking it in a state tax man's eye. Tom expertly deposited another juicy jet into the cuspidor and, still holding the paper aloft in reading position, commented, "Alonzo Wilkerson of Johnson Township was arrested by Sheriff Parks on a charge of being in possession of a still." "Do tell," said Jim. "Well, old Sheriff Parks may have got an inkling that perhaps Alonzo did not support him in the last election. Or perhaps the sheriff was on the hook for the refreshments at some fancy holiday soiree of the high-up muckety-mucks such as the likes of you and me will never see. Perhaps. At any rate, Squire Calvin cut him loose on a $1,000 bond to appear in court for the February term. Imagine what it would be like to have $1,000 just sitting around waiting for pay your bail," said Jim. "You could buy a brand new Ford sedan for $660. "Imagine spending Christmas sitting in jail with Sam Parks," Tom replied. They both laughed. In a Wednesday night program at the schoolhouse, the scholars of Nashville schools rendered an interesting and entertaining holiday entertainment. The most common requests in letters to Santa from kids in Nashville were for a doll and a dollhouse or a gun and a wagon. A head-on collision at the bridge near the dog farm, 11 miles east of Nashville on the road to Columbus, resulted in a broken windshield, broken fender, and broken lights. His wife suffered slight bruises about the head and face. "I see where the Melodeon has the Thundering Herd this weekend. I might go see that. Doesn't get any better than Zane Grey. Jack Holt and Noah Berry, not bad for two bits. If you've got it." The Ladies' Aid Society of Nashville ME Church is holding its annual Christmas Bazaar Friday at Miller's Drugstore. "Now, for pure entertainment value, it will be hard to beat this Red Man Lodge deal," said Tom, straightening up the paper and reading. "Chief Eagle Feather, to speak on redmanship, will deliver the principal address at 2:30. Other great chiefs will be present. All pale faces are welcome." "Uh-huh," said Jim. "Horicon Tribe of New Bellsville will confer the adoption degree, the Columbus team the warrior's degree, and the Taylorsville team will confer the chief's degree in the hall to red men only." "No pale faces allowed," said Jim. "A street parade will be given at 6:30. "I wonder if the chief is bringing Princess Silverheels to this powwow," said Jim. "That might be worth a gander." Tom got up to fix the fire, and Jim took the opportunity to stealthily slip a small parcel into the pocket of his denim work coat hanging on the back of the chair. A little package of beechnut chew, his favorite. Down at the train depot in Helmsburg, an unforgettable Christmas treat was being unloaded for a few select families. Huge stalks of ripe, fresh bananas had arrived on a freight car from New Orleans. By and by, Jim excused himself with holiday wishes and headed out the door while Tom stayed to close up. The snow crunched under his feet as he made his way down night-enfolded Main Street. Making his turn at the town pump, he decided to sit for a moment and take in the near-perfect snow-covered nighttime quietness. Nearly 1926 now. He noticed that a light was still burning in the parsonage of the Methodist Church. Probably the old preacher was in there wrangling up the Christmas homily. Maybe he would quote the opening of the Gospel of John about how a new light was coming into the world, and that light was the light of love and caring and human kindness, and in that light was the life of men. Jim sat for a moment in the darkened, empty street, fished for his pipe. "And the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it," he muttered softly to himself. He reached for his plug of tobacco, but his hand struck a small, hard object in his pocket. He took it out, and there was a fine new pocket knife. Tom must have somehow slipped it in there. He smiled as he sliced off a chunk of tobacco. "A sure enough Barlow," he said with a grin.
And this is Sarah Lytle at the Brown County Hour with Kate and Danielle from Brown County Bikes.
Yeah. Hi, Sarah. Thank you so much for having us. I'm Kate Nolan, and this is my wife, Danielle Walter Nolan.
We have brought back in Kate and Danielle to talk to us about the pump track.
Yeah.
And it's where? At Deer Run?
Yeah, it's located at Deer Run, Sarah. And so it's just north of the skate park, between the skate park and the community garden.
So what is a pump track?
A pump track is a course. It can be paved or a mix of pavement and dirt. Ours is going to be paved. That's usually, it costs more money, but we did that to save with, you know, maintenance fees over time. So it's going to be less maintenance overall. But it is called a pump track because essentially you don't have to pedal. Usually you pump your body to go through the different rollers and different terrain changes that is built into the track. So you can pump with your arms and your legs and the bike you're on to roll you through the course.
It's such a great way to develop.
I'll have to see this.
Yeah, it's such a great way to develop confidence and balance on your bike. And it's great for folks of all ages. So we're really fortunate. We were able to raise money with a lot of great community partners, the Community Foundation, the CVC, the CVB, Brown County Mountain Biking, and the International Mountain Bike Association.
Mm-hmm.
But we've managed to get one in that's paved. It's asphalt, and it does have concrete lips. There's also progressive jump lines. So it's a great way to work your way into dirt jumps. There's also a skills area with drop zone and varying heights of skinnies, elevated skinnies.
Yeah, so it's not just rubber on the road, you're airborne.
Oh, yeah, you can get air if you want. You can keep the wheels on the ground or you can definitely get air. But there's two ride hubs. And one of the things that I'm most excited about is the main hub will house a shipping container and it's got our youth fleet of bikes in it. So we'll be able to open up those bikes to kids in the community to overcome economic barriers.
Oh,
and so that's
nice.
Really exciting for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now we have a trailer that we do events in the park for kids. And now with the pump track, we'll be able to get that out more regularly, and the track is right there. So as opposed to sometimes there's issues with the youth getting into the park and there can be issues there, but now right at Deer Run, it's going to be so much easier and we'll be able to do more events and get more kids on bikes.
And so, again, you said that you have bikes that will be available to rent for underprivileged children.
Yeah, so they will be free to use for kids in the community that don't have access to bikes. So we have some Strider bikes, which are balance bikes. It's a great way for kids to learn. Pump track is a perfect setting. They run along with their legs. They have a seat. They can put their feet up and roll through the rollers. It's basically like a little roller coaster, the pump track.
Oh, gosh, I want to do this.
Yeah,
yeah,
and then
you are going to do
20-inch bikes and 24-inch bikes. So we're kind of catering to the younger kids and just trying to encourage more of a healthy lifestyle, healthy community, and to get more families and kids out on bikes.
Great. Well, thank you for coming in and talking about this. And I'm really looking forward to this grand opening or some events at Deer Run and trying out the pump track myself.
Yeah, we can't
wait. For sure. We're going to get you out there, Sarah.
Well, and everyone else listening out there. So thanks a lot for tuning in to Brown County Hour. This is Sarah Lytle with Kate and Danielle from Brown County Bikes.
This is actually one of my newest songs. I went through a little period of not writing a lot because I was raising a kid. And then I was thinking a lot about how, in particular, women get told, like, to be sunny and bright and smile and all the time. And I was thinking that really so much of our power comes from our darkness and being willing to be okay with being okay with that. So that's what this song is about.
Keys to the underground.
We pause for station identification.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on Volunteer Powered Community Radio, WFHB, at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Support for WFHB comes from the Brown County Inn, located just off the main street of Nashville, Indiana, at 51 State Road 46 East. Brown County Inn is also a restaurant, bar, and gathering place for visitors and locals alike. More information at browncountyinn.com.
Our final segment begins with a conversation we had with Dave Gore, John Sisson, and James Tracy as they discuss the Native Son art exhibit that features them at the Brown County Art Gallery. Dave Seastrom shares the history of the Great Clear Cut in Brown County. We have a public service announcement about the Christ Kindl Market, and we close our show with a live studio recording of Little Brown Bird by the Mingledees.
Well, this is Pam Rader for the Brown County Hour. Oh, do I have a treat for you all tonight. I went to the opening of the Native Sons exhibit at the Brown County Art Gallery, and it was a fabulous time, and the art was really good. And I was able to get the three artists, the three Native Sons, to come in and speak to us tonight. So I'm really excited. Thank you all for coming.
So, good to be here.
All right. Well, let's start with you, Jim.
Okay.
And I hear you were the impetus for making the show happen, and also that you've been an artist since 8 years old or something.
Yeah, I started studying with local people when I was about eight.
That is just amazing to me. And you're actually, in the Brown County lore, the only Native Son here, having been born in Brown County.
Yes, I was. I didn't live here my whole life, but I spent most of it here.
What influenced your style? You obviously, the surroundings, because you paint a lot of older homes, but...
My first instructor was Kay Poole. I don't know if you ever knew Kay Poole, but she was kind of... She was a member of sort of the second wave of Brown County people that came here. they might know more about her than I do. She probably came here in the 40s, I'm guessing. But she had a big loft studio in the old Village Green building.
Mm-hmm.
And so, she was my first art teacher, and she was kind of like a beatnik lady. Always wore a beret, flaming red hair. She was just really cool. So she was my first teacher, and that was fun. That was really fun.
Well, I've seen your artwork around a lot, and you've sometimes been at the holiday market, but it was wonderful to see all your art.
Thanks.
Right there in the big room in the gallery.
Thank you. You asked me who my influence was or what influenced me to do certain styles and stuff. I was exposed to like all those early Brown County artists from a young age. So that's probably why I still do landscape paintings, because I just always loved that impressionistic style. And L.L. Griffith and Anthony Buxton and a couple of the other guys were bachelors or widowers or whatever. And my grandmother did their laundry for them. So so they would come into the house a lot, and I'd be sitting there drawing, you know, and they'd always come over and pat me on the shoulder. You know, nice job, son.
Okay, well, now we'll address Dave Gord, since you're in the seat next to him. And Dave, I've known you for a long time. We've interviewed you umpteen times on music, and I've known as a carpenter. I never knew you did any art, so it was really great to see your stuff. And tell me a little about that.
I've been hiding that for years.
It worked.
I started back in high school. I had an art class, and we got permission to do an anything you want kind of project. So I went down to the wood shop and got all their scraps and brought them back to the art room and constructed this 6 foot tall construction of wood scraps. And that was kind of the beginning of where I got the interest of the style that I do. And jump ahead to the mid 80s. In the 80s, I started doing these constructions using found object materials and in kind of an assemblage style. And I put those together just as something fun to do. I have no purpose. There's no real meaning in any of the images of what I do. It's purely abstract expressionism. Mm-hmm. And I've been doing that for off and on for about the last 30 or 40 years.
And when I talked to you Saturday, I said, do you just put them on here hodgepodge? And no, you spend a lot of time getting them placed where you want them, right?
There is a method to my madness. and yes, I do place them. I can spend hours, maybe weeks or months working on a piece, setting it aside, going back to it, adding things. It's not just a matter of throwing everything onto a surface. It does have a somewhat of a plan to it, even though it doesn't look like it when you're viewing the piece. It looks like a hodgepodge of a lot of different things. But
they weren't disharmonious. So when you told me that, I thought, yes, I can see there's a kind of balance to them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I kind of strive for that. And I get to a point where I just have to stop. I mean, there's so much going on in some of the things I do that it gets to a point where I just have to say, okay, I'm done with it, or it becomes an obsession.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And John, last but certainly not least, and I've known you as a writer and a poet. I've seen a lot of your art. You do more than one style, but the style at the show, what would you call it? They're almost cartoonish looking, but they're sci-fi as well.
And there's some Native American stuff in there.
Yes.
I grew up in the woods. And I started to be a photographer at 6 years old. My brother gave me a camera, and then I had my own darkroom at seven. So for nature, I've always used the camera.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to Purdue, they said, put something on the earth that's never been here before in art. And I went, hot ziggity. And so that was being Native American. Storytelling is a part of the thing that I do in my drawings. You will see they look like a little picture, a little vignette out of some kind of a story,
mm-hmm.
whether it's sci-fi or, you know, Native American or whatever. Mm-hmm. neat thing about that here in Brown County, storytelling's a big deal here in Brown County.
Yeah.
I've sat around, I can't tell you how many campfires with these two guys telling stories and lies and all kinds of other things. Mm-hmm. It's because of Jim Tracy that you're looking at my work right now. Because it's not about, to me, putting my work out there for people to see. Mm-hmm. It's actually about doing the work.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So God bless Jim Tracy, because if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be sitting here doing this and nobody would be seeing this stuff.
Yeah.
And it may be the only time they'll ever see this stuff, because it is so strange.
I've been speaking with Jim Tracy, Dave Gore, and John Sisson. They have an art exhibit going of their work, and it's showing at the Brown County Art Gallery. Number one artist drive until December 15th. So thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you, Pam.
Thank you for having us.
The last vestiges of the pioneer lifestyle took place in Brown County before World War II. The kids that grew up here in the 30s lived an almost identical life to the one their grandparents did, but it was markedly different than the preceding generations that lived in the virgin forest. They were certainly aware that they were surrounded by people who lived a modern existence that they didn't share in places like Indianapolis. During the height of the Great Clear Cut, there were at least four operating sawmills in Helmsburg that cut wood with carriage mills powered by steam. The town was more than twice the size it is now, and it featured a large dance hall where loggers and supporting workers gathered on a Saturday night. The accounts of those dances paint a picture of a rough and tumble affair that included drinking, dancing, horse racing, and sometimes a rowdy brawl. Due to its rough terrain, Brown County contained one of the last stands of virgin timber in Indiana. This is in part because the northern, flatter portion of the state was cleared for highly desirable farmland, and the area north of the Ohio River was settled first. Before the railroad came to Brown County, there was little or no market value for our timber. When the farm fields and small homesteads were cleared, the logs that weren't used to make cabins were rolled to the edges of the clearing and burnt. From the early accounts, the fires lasted for weeks at a time. By the time commercial logging arrived here, the timber had value. The timber industry employed hundreds of people, either directly or indirectly. Trees were harvested with two-man misery whips and hauled to the sawmills with oxen and horses. This method churned up the forest floor, but left the mycelium, native plants, and seeds intact. Eventually, this seed stock provided the necessary ingredients for the forest to regenerate itself through benign neglect. The vast expanse of forest land in Brown County was, in spite of its daunting size, finite. It must have taken upwards of a dozen years to complete the task. Even so, not all of the original forest was clear-cut. Dendritic studies have found pre-Revolutionary War-age trees in the Yellowwood backcountry area in places that were too rugged for the oxen to haul them out, and early aerial photography shows substantial canopy in some areas. At some point, it must have been obvious that the timber harvest was coming to an end, that the last stronghold of valley or ridgetop trees signaled the end of the enterprise. Every man on the crew must have known that as soon as the last trees were hauled to the mill, their work was over, and soon they would be out of a job. I've often wondered if there was some kind of ceremony or celebration when the last giant tree was hauled to Helmsburg, or if the loggers shrugged it off and packed their belongings and headed west to follow the timber barons without regard for what they had done in the name of progress. Likewise, the sawmill operators must have seen the writing on the wall. When the very last logs were brought in and the last trainload of sawn lumber left the station, did they have one last dance at the hall? As far as I know, there was no written accounts of how they felt, but the consequences were unavoidable. The economic collapse that took place following the Great Clear Cut in the 1890s into the early 20th century began an exodus that eventually saw half of Brown County's population move to other locations for better opportunities.
Before the clear cut took place, the local economy was forest-based, with hunting and subsistent farming that was combined with some local industry that produced tan bark for making hides and whiskey stills that quenched the thirst of locals and travelers alike. The removal of the forest meant the loss of a way of life that existed here for most of the 19th century for the European settlers and thousands of years for the Native Americans before them. Without the game and nut crops that the forest supported, it became almost impossible to make a living. The loss of the timber industry meant the sawmills closed down and all of the loggers were out of a job. The logger barons, who made most of the money, went west to cut redwood and Douglas fir, and many of the workers went with them. Today, we have a forest that's on its way to becoming old growth, if we let it. This is a choice of how we manage our public lands. Will we allow nature to take its course, or will we let the money-first forces have their way? The answer is up to us. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time.
Not feeling the holiday spirit? Stop by the 5th annual Chris Kendall Market in Coachlight Square for a flavor of old-time European Christmas. The December 6-7 holiday market will feature one-of-a-kind gifts, unique art, food, oddities, plus lots of Christmas entertainment. More entertainment will be held at Nashville Village Green Pavilion. For more information, Brown County Chris Kendall Market.com or contact Lisa Hall at GloryGirlProductions.com. That website again is Brown County Chris Kendall Market.com.
You working on
paper sack. I heard you singing on a low branch, waiting for your redbird to come back. Hey, little brown bird, play. Hey, little brown bird. Hey, little brown bird.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 165 of the Brown County Hour. This show was recorded in our studio at the History Center here in downtown Nashville and brought to you the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m. and anytime online. Be sure to look for us on your favorite streaming services.
The Brown County Hour is brought to you by a diverse group of folks who believe, now more than ever, the world is for everyone.
This show was produced by
Chuck Wills,
Pam Rader,
Rick Fettig,
Vera Grubbs,
Lucy Schultz,
Sarah Lytle,
Chad Carruthers,
and Dave Seastrom. We would also like to thank Slats Klug for our theme music. You have been listening to the Brown County Hour,
coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County home.